Welcome to Unabridged, the weekly podcast where four teachers take on books. We're your hosts. I'm Ashley, and I'm here with Jenny, Jen, and Sarah. We'll chat about our book club's pick of the month, discuss selected young adult novels, recommend related books, and share our nerdy English teacher love of reading. To follow along with our schedule, visit our website, unabridgedpod.com. You want opinions about books? We've got them.
Hey, this is Jenny, and today we're discussing Far From the Tree by Robin Benway. It's a story about three siblings separated at birth by either adoption or being placed in foster care, finding each other in their teens, and navigating the complicated relationships in their lives, both adoptive and biological. The book is told through multiple perspectives, alternating through each sibling's point of view. Grace just gave up her own daughter after getting pregnant at 16 and discovers that she has two biological siblings she's never known about. She reaches out to Maya, who is dealing with her own parent struggles and always feeling a little bit on the outside. Together they find Joaquin, who has spent his life bouncing through the foster care system. As the book progresses, these three siblings discover each other while also learning more about themselves, their biological mother, and the connections they never expected to experience. Okay, girls, what do we think about this book?
So this is Jen. I love this book so much. So I was in the middle of reading this book, and I got a message from Jenny saying, I just read this fabulous book. We should consider it for the podcast. Yep. And I was in, because I just thought from the beginning, I think the characters are compelling. I thought the story was really well developed. It brought about laughter and tears and all the things you want in a great book. And, you know, I had initially picked it up because I like to kind of read the award winners for the year. And this one won the National Book Award for Young People's Literature. And typically those are pretty good picks. And I thought this was a solid pick that raised some interesting issues that will be great for today's discussion.
Agreed.
This is Sarah, and I pretty much ditto on everything that Jen said. I really love these characters. There were a few things that I wish maybe would have been different, and we'll discuss those as we go on. But overall, I thought the characters were really well fleshed out. I loved Joaquin. I loved his the way that the author used him in the book. I just thought it was awesome. And I just thought it had a really good cast of supporting characters as well.
Yes.
So I thought it was really strong. I thought it was really strong YA literature. Yeah. I think it's something that is underrepresented dealing with adoption and fostering. I feel like it's underrepresented in terms of recent kind of contemporary fiction for young adults. So I thought that was really, I thought it was really good. And I would, I mean, I would definitely recommend it to a friend or a grown up or a young adult.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Ashley. And I agree with a lot of what y'all said. I think there were some of the logistics in the book that I struggled with a little bit. But I mean, I loved it overall. I loved the book, and I loved that it, that she, Benway, really dug into some deep issues that were really hard and showed them in a complex way and did not oversimplify, you know, what the choices were and how they happened. I loved all the stuff about adoption because, I mean, I really loved Grace's struggle. Just how much it showed that what was right for, how hard it was for her. Because I think so often we think, you know, I mean, we have the kind of this perception that kids who are given up aren't wanted. And so I just really loved breaking down that stereotype and just showing that a lot of times that's not true, and that it is a hard choice for moms to make and one that pains them and that they carry with them. And I just felt like that was really well represented. And like you said, Sarah, I loved Joaquin and I loved his resilience, but also his struggle and how his life of being passed around was so difficult and all the ways that he tried to compensate in order to be what people wanted him to be and how much of a burden. And then Maya, you know, I loved like the way she didn't feel like she fit in with her family. I think sometimes there were parts that she took on so many issues and I really appreciated that. But I also felt sometimes I felt the weight of that sometimes. I felt like sometimes it didn't feel, all of it didn't feel totally authentic to me, or didn't all ring entirely true at all times. But I think about all that she was covering and how many issues she hit on, and it's very difficult to have that many characters with that many issues and to make all of them feel entirely authentic or true to, you know, a person's experience. And I mean, I think they all were very believable. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how to, I'm sure we'll get into some of the meat of that, because it didn't mean I didn't enjoy the book. I mean, I loved it. I thought it was beautiful and powerful. And just like Sarah said, I would recommend it. I mean, I think it's great for kids and also great for adults. So, you know, I stand by it as an awesome pick. And I'm so glad that we read it. But I do think hashing through it will probably get into just some of the heaviness of trying to deal with all those different issues.
Yeah, so this is Jenny, and I love this book, because obviously I let Jen know I think we needed to read it, and I'm so, so glad that we did. I agree, Sarah, about this great supporting cast of characters. I mean, there wasn't anybody in the book that I felt did not have some truth or some purpose in it. It didn't feel like there were these extraneous people. And it's interesting, actually, as you were just saying, how some of it didn't ring true, which is totally, you know, that's great, that's fine. For me, it did, and I was realizing that I wouldn't go into realistic fiction books often the way other people go into fantasy books. Like, in fantasy, part of what I don't like is that I have to construct this reality, and are you kidding me, and this doesn't make sense. But with realistic, I'm like, yeah, people are totally messy, and this is ridiculous. And I'm much quicker to sort of buy into the realistic struggles, because it felt like each individual person did not have too many struggles. I mean, they had hard times, but each individual person made sense. Putting them all together was a book filled with people with struggles, but that's life. You know, people are messy, and they have messy lives. And I liked at one point when Joaquin was talking to his therapist, I think, Anna, where he said, she said, what did it feel like when you told your sisters, which we'll get into later, about what happened when you were younger? And he said, it's like when my bike had training wheels. And the training wheels, I knew they weren't going to let me fall down. And so that's sort of what family is, and, you know.
Yeah, all that you said about the bookends. Yeah. Because with Mark and Linda, he felt that way, too. I know.
So let's get started by digging into Grace. Let's go with Grace first, because the book opens with Grace. She's the first one we meet. So let's talk about Grace being pregnant and how her choosing to give up the baby impacted her and all of those ins and outs.
I thought what was so, I mean, just right at the beginning, it hit so hard because it opens with her as being this really typical kid who's looking forward to the dance, to the prom, and has all these plans, and then she discovers she's pregnant, and her life changes. And I think what I liked about her portrayal so much was there was never a moment when she really thought she would take the baby back. She knew she had done the right thing, but like Ashley, you said, how difficult that was, and that what is most difficult in some ways is that she has such a happy life and such great parents without Grace. And so I thought that was so, so moving. And I think how hard, I mean, how hard that is for anyone, but especially a teenage girl whose previous focus has been on getting the best, you know, the great dress and having the great boyfriend, to have to work through those issues. I feel like it, there have been several podcasts where I've talked about parents, but I thought watching Grace's relationship with her parents develop and the way that they change. This is, I'm just going to say, spoilers starting now.
Later, dive right in.
That's right. Later in the book, when she has started developing this relationship with Raffi, and her parents are questioning her, and she says, does this one experience mean that I can never fall in love or have a boyfriend or anything again? And I thought, man, like, I so identified with her. But then you think about her parents, and that's like, of course they wanted to protect her then. Yeah, I just thought, I mean, Benway does such a good job of making you understand as a reader the complexity of everyone's outlook.
I thought
Grace was a great place to start for that.
And I loved how she had Grace attached to that baby from the moment that she was in her womb. And I mean, and that she named her, she called her Peach, and that she just had this connection with the baby the whole time. And even though she was a teenager, and that goes back to what Ashley said, but even she represented her, even as a teenager, she still was connected, and still it was hard to give the baby up. I think often we think that when young people get pregnant, that it's easy for them to give the baby up for adoption.
The easy way.
Or like it's like a selfish choice. Like they're doing it
to their lifestyle
for their own benefit.
Because they still want to be a teenager.
Because
they are A, still a teenager, and B, is that really going to be an easy choice? Ever?
I do think we oversimplify.
I think so too. And I loved how it never let up, you know, throughout the whole book. That was a thread that she struggled with throughout the whole book.
Well, and the complexity with that, Sarah, that I thought was so awesome, was how it took Grace a while, even though she was really warming up to Maya and Joaquin and really trusting them, and they were coming together. It took almost an accident for her to reveal. And she was so scared that they would think, I gave my daughter up because she wasn't wanted. Yep. Or that because all those intricate layers of emotion. I felt like Benway did such a good job at creating these characters before, and you knew how Grace felt. But then looking at the way Joaquin had bounced around, I mean, just all these different things, it came together really nicely.
Yeah.
Because, of course, she's nervous about telling her siblings, not because it's her mistake or anything. It wasn't like that. It was because, what are they going to think? We were all given up. And what is that going to mean for them? Because now have I betrayed them by doing what I thought was best for Peach? I love that she called her Peach.
That was so sweet. Well, especially for Joaquin. Because I think for both her and Maya, they had solid family structures after the adoption. But when she saw what adoption meant to him, that it didn't happen.
Yes.
I think that relationship, again, I'm going to keep using the word complex, because I think that adds extra complexity to that decision.
Yeah.
Because for Maya, it worked out okay.
Yes.
Well, even though... kind of sort okay.
Yeah, I was like, Anyway,
Joaquin would say it worked out okay for Maya, I think, compared to him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he knows that it's not perfect, but I think compared to bouncing around.
Right.
And she did, she did have parents who tried, even though they struggled with their own demons. It
and
wasn't that they
loved
didn't love her.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's
the thing. She knew that they loved her. I was just looking at the quote that I mean, a lot of the quotes about Grace I think were just so amazing, but one that I loved was where it said one of the reasons Grace had given up Peach was because she hadn't wanted her life to stop. You're so young, her parents had implored over and over again, but nobody told Grace that her life might stop anyway, that she'd be trapped in the amber of her pregnancy of Peach while the rest of the world continued to change around her.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, so
that's
so
beautiful.
And there's the other one where it's about Max and his shoes.
Yes.
And, like, how he's busy shopping for new shoes. And, you know, like, just the superficiality of what he is able to do. And that was another part. I mean, that's a whole part of Grace, is the slut-shaming.
Yes.
And
the way
judgment.
Max was treated totally differently.
Well, and his parents
were he's with a good girl.
They were awful.
And she said, you mean a girl whose womb is not occupied. That is exactly what you mean. Not currently occupied. So I just feel like she could so perceive how everyone around her. And, I mean, I think that had to do, of course, it made her more reluctant to tell Joaquin and Maya. And not that she thought they would judge her in that way, but she had been judged so heavily.
It was all on her.
Everyone was
cool.
Right.
She was a recipient of all of the judging.
Right. And I think that's how it is. I mean, I think that's very realistic.
I think that a lot of this, I've had a lot of teen mothers that I've taught. Mm-hmm. And I think I have never had one give up their child, number one. And so I appreciated that perspective on this, because I think sometimes kids... Not that you just want them to know all their options.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes kids don't even know all their options. But I loved that this book showed how difficult that was. But regardless, I mean, just seeing the way that, the way that they were treated and judged. And, you know, very often the boyfriend was very public and also well known by the
he
school
was crowned
community.
Homecoming king.
Right. Like, so everybody's aware.
He's born.
Everybody's aware, but there's just no impact on the fathers like there is on the mothers. And I also loved the maturity of Grace. And, like, she gave up the baby. But I think I have seen so many teen moms who are phenomenal people and do these courageous things with this life that they wind up having to support.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I just
think... It changes everything.
Yeah. I just think that sometimes, again, I think a lot of the stereotyping of teen moms is that they give up the baby because they're just being selfish or whatever, or that they keep the baby, but they're going to do this lousy job because they're just a teenager.
Right.
And I just feel like I've seen some teen moms do some really phenomenal things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But do you know what I love about that quote, Ashley, that you just read, is that whole idea that the rest of the world is going on around her. And it's a silly example, but I've never forgotten it. In 2001, one of my grandmothers died. And it was a Friday afternoon. It was this beautiful, sunny afternoon in May. And we were in the hospital, and it was about 3 or 3:30. And she died, and she'd been sick. She'd been in the hospital for a month. It was not unexpected at all. But then we left the hospital to kind of go and start this process of what happens after someone dies. You know, get together as a family. And, and I remember walking out of the hospital and seeing this beautiful, bright, sunny blue day. And everybody is just living their lives. Nobody else on the street knows that we've just had this death. And, like, my whole life has just changed. And that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And it's so, I love that kind of thing because it's exactly what you're doing. You're carrying on and you're thinking, I'm sorry, we just had a death. Are you like, mm-hmm. you're just here at Burger King just doing your thing? But of course they are.
Right.
That's how the world goes on. But when you're the one that's in the middle of that, it feels like there's always something that you have with you or mm-hmm. that's forever altered. How you are, and it just becomes part of your new normal.
Yeah,
but it's definitely a process.
Yeah, one I was like, what is a nice word? The total jerk who plays the baby crying on the phone.
I know.
I was so enraged.
I mean, you know, they know this thing has happened to her, but have no
ability
at all to empathize.
Well, okay, but then so let's jump also later because we already covered spoilers where Joaquin and Maya and Grace are all together, and I forget what's his name. Adam.
Adam.
Jerk.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That jerk.
So that Adam is Max's best friend.
Yes,
so
right.
Max is the father
total
of Grace's
jerk.
Baby. Yeah,
and he basically starts slut shaming. Mm-hmm. Grace and say, assuming Joaquin is the new boyfriend.
Right.
Does this new boyfriend know what you've just been through the past year? I mean, you know, he's basically taunting her. And I love that Joaquin is brotherly and protective and is like, you're talking about my sister. I mean, that was such a pivotal moment for me in that story. I love that he stood up for his sister, they thought of her as his sister, and then he put that jerk in his place. I love that too.
Right. Well, they have the power of the sibling.
Yes.
And the power of family
to
support you and how, you know, she had missed that in the sibling department prior.
Well, and I loved that Adam had a mother who had been a single mother.
Yes.
And that, I just thought, again, that's a place that Benway, there's this expectation that his mom and dad are going to be jerks. And then you find out that there's hidden depth even there. And I also appreciated that for Joaquin, that was a time that then we learned, like, he stood up for her sister, and I thought that was amazing. But then for him, that is scary.
Yes.
That is revealing a hidden side of his character.
Yes.
And so just the way that spirals into these larger questions and issues, I think, the way she develops through those alternating perspectives is so great.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Oh, yeah.
So let's go ahead and go to Joaquin then. Let's look at Joaquin. So he has bounced through the foster system throughout his whole life. He's got this counselor, Anna, this therapist, and now he's living with Mark and Linda, these wonderful foster parents.
Oh, I love
them. But he spent his life bouncing around trying to find somewhere. And then there's this one incident that you referred to, Jen. So what do you guys think about Joaquin?
Aww.
I know, you're this collective
character.
So let's talk about Mark. Let's start with Mark and Linda. Let's start with the present. You have Mark and Linda, this wonderful set of foster parents who want to adopt him.
Yeah, I think so. Just his struggle with whether or not to be adopted,
especially at his age, because he's 17, right?
Was so fleshed out so well.
Yes,
Because you think, why don't you just jump on
exactly?
Right? It's a solution. It's a family.
She could have had like a simple solution, but instead looked at the layers of that and the implications of that. And so, I mean, I loved that he didn't, even though, I mean, largely because he loved them so much that he didn't. He was scared to be adopted and scared that he would mess things up. And I mean, you know, thinking about all the issues that got hit on, like the family with Natalie with the baby, where he, you know, with the incident.
When
he
was
12,
with the stapler.
With the stapler and the baby. And I just thought, when it hit the toddler, I just thought that she did such a great job of showing how you can imagine this happening and see people's perspectives. And even though we hate the family for doing that and hate the dad for, or, you know, the foster father, the foster parent.
But hadn't they gone through with the adoption? Hadn't they actually adopted him?
They had at that point. That's true.
Right.
So
it wasn't even foster. At that point, it's your adopted father.
Right. Who does this, you know? And so I just think, you hate them for doing it, but then you also can see how horrifying that that whole situation spiraled so far out of control, and how that impacts Joaquin so long later.
Well, and I think it would have been so easy to make him this typical rebellious teen who acts like a jerk to Mark and Linda, and it doesn't. Like, he does things sometimes rashly, but then he just deals with it so well. And I think it would have been super easy for them to just get angry with him.
Yes.
But they're so understanding.
I love them.
Not in a cheesy way at all. Yeah, that is why
they held
so
him accountable.
Right.
They were like, what are you doing? You can't just whatever. I mean, they expected good things out of him, but they held him accountable, but they just loved him.
Right. But they also didn't pressure him unnecessarily. I mean, just watching them balance that relationship through the book. And give him what he needed, which was security and someone to depend on, and they were consistent and reliable, it was really amazing to see how much he needed that, even at 17.
Well, because think, he's been adopted, and then this incident comes where he is so mad he throws the stapler, hits this little sister so accidentally.
Right. His, and he's still so heartbroken.
He's so upset.
His
new father breaks his arm. Right, hits him hard, never pushes him hard to break his arm. And then he gets given back.
Yeah.
And I think, was it Maya? I think it was, they can do that. They can they can give you back after you've been adopted, which it was so stunning. Like, how can you give somebody back? You've adopted them.
Right.
So I'm sure in his mind, he's like, so what if they adopt me now? What if they decide in 6 months it's not worth it anyway? I mean, that's his experience.
Yeah.
So let's think about his relationship with Birdie. Because I have this quote that that just really struck me. Because there's this girl, Birdie, that he loves, right? And he breaks up with her, and he's trying to explain. This is what he says. He says, he was so tired of making the people around him sad when all he wanted to do was keep them safe. And he talked about school pictures and the packages that they sell. And he says, Birdie had all these photos. Someone had saved them for her. I saw those, and I thought, Joaquin's voice trailed off as he remembered how the photos had made his stomach feel like it was collapsing in on itself. We would never be equal. She would always have more than me, always need more than me. She needs someone who understands things like she does.
I thought the symbolism of photographs throughout the novel was developed so beautifully because you see what, you know, Grace gets the photograph of Peach. I can't remember her.
Millie,
thank you.
Yeah.
You see the impact, you know, Joaquin sees Maya's wall of photographs of Maya and her sister and the impact. And then when he finally gets the photos of himself as a baby, you just feel like he's been given his history.
That's why I started crying.
I mean, that book, the photos are big in my family. Like, my mother is kind of obsessive. And so we have photo albums everywhere. And I just thought, I get that. Like, I get why that is so moving, because you feel like that tells the story of who you are. And so to watch that develop for all three of the kids through the book was, it was beautiful. It was one of my favorite things.
Yes.
And when she got the photos of the baby, too.
Oh, my gosh.
It was all,
More ugly tears from Jen.
I know. All right. So then let's go ahead and move on at this point to Maya. All right. So Maya's in a situation where I think the rest of them had red hair, right? And she's the one that obviously sticks out and does not have the red hair and doesn't look quite the same. And Maya also, we haven't even talked about this, she introduced an interesting dynamic that Maya's a lesbian. It was never an issue throughout the book, I felt like. I mean, it was treated as if it was any other relationship, which was an interesting choice, because I think that that shows a lot about where literature has come.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're getting to see more and more of that in books, the normalization of different types of relationships and different types of people. But, I mean, I agree that that was, again, just a layer of her as a complex person and not, you know, not a point. But, you know, she talks about it, like, when she's telling Grace or Joaquin, like, he has that response where he's like, I can tell that she's waiting to see how I'm going to respond to this. And knowing that, you know, she wants to know how, if I'm going to react or if it's just fine. So, you know, obviously she was aware of it, but, And then what she says about with her parents and, like, her dad that puts the rainbow flag in the barn. And how she's like, you know, I had to explain it to him and break it down. You know, I thought all that stuff was neat. But I liked with both Joaquin and Birdie and Maya and Claire, I loved how Benway did a great job of showing the way that our relationships with our own family, and in their case, the adoptions, impacted their relationships, their partner relationships. Because I think, of course, like, our familial relationships impact any romantic relationships we have. And so, like, I appreciated seeing how that played out. And when things start falling apart for her, like, I love, there were several times where she talked about, like, the vine that was, like, strangling, and how she felt like she couldn't stop herself, that, like, things were spiraling out of control, and she didn't want to hurt the people around her, but she couldn't stop herself. And I thought that part was all developed so nicely to just show that when, you know, when you're having a hard time, like, when somebody in your family's having a hard time, it impacts you and then impacts your ability to relate to the people you love.
And it was also really a nice choice that she had her have a sibling, so you can get that perspective. And I really liked Maya because I appreciate a straightforward person, and I appreciated her just being, like, a straight shooter and not sugarcoating things. And she kind of reminded me a little bit of Daisy and Charles All the Way Down.
Oh, yeah.
I could see
bringing
that.
In my background knowledge.
well done.
But I really liked just her, you know, basically no nonsense, you know. She just told it like it was. And I also like that she was like, accept me or not. Yeah. I am who I am. Yeah.
Well, like, Grace was so annoyed by her. Like, that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's realistic, too. And the fact that her biological, or her adoptive sister, sorry, really struggled. Lauren was like, you now have all these new people, but I'm still here. And I'm the one that went through this with mom with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? There was a lot of tension in that that I think was handled. Having sisters, biological, not adoptive, but having sisters felt real.
And I understood where Maya was coming from in the way that she craved this family, but I also understood where Lauren was coming from. And she was like, to me, it seemed like Lauren just saw her as a sister. Because, I have a biological sister, and we love each other, but we also can drive, especially when we were younger, could drive each other crazy. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was the relationship they had. But then when the biological siblings came along, it was like, I totally got where Lauren was coming from.
Yeah, because I think in her mind, her sisters are sisters. Like that, so my husband's brother is adopted, and there are four of them.
Yeah.
So there are three that are biological and a fourth that is adopted. And absolutely, I think that all of them see each other. I mean, they are just brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Right?
There is no distinction at all. So I can see how, for Maya, it's like, oh, wow, I have this additional family.
Right.
But it's my family, not our family.
Right.
And I think that's what's hard, is so often, even if you found out you had half siblings or whatever,
yes.
it would be your family and their family. It wouldn't be, I have somebody that we don't have as siblings.
Well, because for Maya, her family's just expanded. There are more of them.
Yeah.
For Lauren, it's like this either or. Well, now you have this new sister.
She's afraid she's going to lose the family she does have.
Yeah.
Well, and Maya, really I wrote down this one quote that Maya, it was, because this is like the kind of stuff that you just carry in your relationship, but don't necessarily say. She was talking about her parents. She says, they don't read books about Lauren, who's the adoptive sister, just me, because I'm different. I'm work.
Yeah.
Which what she's saying there is, because she's adopted,
they
want to make sure they've integrated her well in the family. They're doing it from the right place. And lots of people read books about parenting, but it's an interesting thing to think that adopted is so powerful and so beautiful. But it is a different kind of relationship at first, at least if you've never done that, never lived through. And you want to make sure that this child feels connected and loved and all those great things. I like that the adoption was not almost like a dirty little secret.
Right.
We've been this open thing, and we'll help. Or the parents were like, we want to help you. And I liked that it didn't feel stereotypical.
Yeah.
The kids that had parents, like Maya and Grace, had parents that loved them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like they were just a way for the parents to have helpers in the house or get money from the state or whatever it was. You were not those stereotypical things you hear sometimes.
And same with the fostering. I liked how they showed how Benway showed the whole spectrum that there can be bad situations, but there can also be really lovely situations.
Yes.
And it's both.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things I thought with Lauren, and probably one of the reasons she feels so vulnerable, is that the expansion of Maya's family happens when their nuclear family is falling apart.
Yes. Right.
And so I thought that's
a great juxtaposition.
Yeah. I mean, that really highlights exactly how much turmoil there was.
Mm-hmm.
And I also enjoyed, I agree, I like Maya because she's a straight shooter and she's super honest. But you also see how fragile she is. And the fact that she is really direct about her feelings does not mean that she doesn't still have a lot of them. Like, she's still, you know, she's worried that she is extra somehow to her nuclear family. You know, once the divorce happens, obviously Lauren's taken care of. Is she taken care of in the same way?
Yeah.
So even though she's been raised in this super secure family up till these problems start happening, she does not always feel secure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the relationship among the siblings took a turn I wasn't quite expecting. I didn't know what to think. I wasn't sure. I mean, I loved it, but I wasn't sure because there's this trepidation at the beginning, and Grace is like, I don't know how to write this email, but hey, I think I'm your sister.
Uh-huh.
And then it starts to develop, but I thought that it was a very tender and a very realistic relationship.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like immediate family, I love you, you love me, but it was, they could see each other, and they could see, I don't know, some similarities and some connections. I thought that she did a really good job at knitting together the beginnings of a really good sibling relationship, because there's something so complex about siblings that's so, I mean, I only have sisters, but I will say sisters, like having somebody who's known me my entire life, and I know my parents have, but they're parents. There's somebody that was a kid with me in this, you know, that remembers these little things from when I was a kid, and they have the ability to say things and do things that are different than any other relationship I think ever. So, I don't know, what do you guys think about the relationship that developed among the three of them?
I thought it was nice that it wasn't instantaneous. Yeah. Like, they definitely felt interest and a bond of some sort, but it wasn't like, hey, mm-hmm. now we are, yeah, now we're best buddies and we know everything about each other and everything's going to be perfect from now on forever. I liked the way it developed somewhat gradually and that they were committed to knowing each other. But, it wasn't, like, just add water. Like, this recipe for, hey,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes I did feel like the ends were really tied up very nicely.
Yes.
But you know, you want it
right.
to be.
Right,
mean,
do.
It's like we talked about before, that sometimes it's like, well,
because when it doesn't, you're like, oh,
but then
my
you think
God.
You, that there's a happy ending and that everything worked out.
Well, but the nice thing is that even when this worked out, like, there is a happy ending at the end of this, but there's still this heartache because, so they go on this search, they decide to find their biological mom, mm-hmm. Melissa, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they're hoping for the best case scenario where they're going to meet her and they all love each other, right? But this is not what happens. So even though it gets wrapped up, it doesn't wrap up with a neat little bow. So let's talk about Melissa and about the choices she made and what happened.
Well, I thought, I liked how that played out. I liked how, well, I mean, this is, of course, a spoiler, but they go to her house, mm-hmm. which that worked out really well, easily.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
That was the one part that was a little like, I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah.
I stopped for
just
a minute.
Suspension just, of
because
so they find the address and she's not there but her sister is.
Right.
Which I don't I'm just not even going
to
dwell on that. You just
that
have to buy into it and go.
Yeah.
But she's died and her sister's there and I liked how the author told what happened mm-hmm. with Melissa and why she made the choices she did. And I really thought it showed how decisions that were out of Melissa's control affected her ability to mm-hmm. make choices about her children
yes.
and what to do.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really good. And I think that's accurate often in life and often mm-hmm. with mothers who get pregnant early and mm-hmm. that sometimes people are making decisions that affect your ability to do what you might want to do.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. The way that they got there was a little shaky for me. But once they got there and learned that, I liked the way that played out about Melissa's life and the choices she made for the kids.
But, you know, but what was interesting, though, is before the day they're going to find her, which I know did really wrap up nice, so that was very convenient. But that morning, and I thought this was very realistic, that's the morning that Joaquin kind of explodes on Mark and Linda, right?
Yeah.
And when he leaves, he's just sure that that's it.
Yeah.
This he has now pushed them too far.
Yep.
And so, because imagine how stirred up you would be at that, because you've never had the second family mm-hmm. that your sister's had. You've never had the adoptive family. So he's all stirred up because what is he going to find?
Mm-hmm. Right.
He was the first one and, you know, did she throw him away in his mind?
Yeah, and I really appreciated it. I felt like she, Benway, one of the issues that she worked on incorporating, I felt, was all the issues of Hispanic culture in mm-hmm. America. And so I really appreciated the whole thing about, like, his family was deported
mm-hmm.
and how unexpected that was for Melissa.
Yes.
It felt
and
so how
modern.
Great they had been. I mean, I just felt like, again, you think about countering stereotypes, and I just felt like even though that was a very, very minor mm-hmm. part of this main story, you know, I really appreciated the struggles that Joaquin had throughout, and that in the end, like, there's this hope that his family, his dad is out there somewhere, and that he has this whole family that he doesn't even know, who didn't even know he existed mm-hmm. because they were sent away, and, you know, so I think I like that part, and that just reminded me where he was always struggling with that. I was just thinking about where Joaquin is his sister or his old foster sibling who said, "You're too much and not enough. White people are only going to see you as Mexican, but you don't even speak Spanish." Mm-hmm. It was clear from her tone of voice. There's a huge black mark in her book.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, that I appreciated that part with Melissa, that it brought in this idea of not just her choices that she had to make, but also Joaquin's father, who mm-hmm. she loved so dearly, and the hardship that they'd all experienced, and then how that impacted the, you know, the future mm-hmm. things that happened. And like you were saying, Sarah, that then things started spiraling out of control for her.
And the way that it all, but the way that that transpired for Joaquin, yes. the fact that he found that he was made out of love,
yes. Yes.
that his mother loved him so much, mm-hmm. and that, I mean, just all yes. the ways that that was when I was doing the cried, Jen.
I'm kind of tearing up a little right now.
I know.
It was
when he opens the safe deposit box and he yes. thinks he's looking at postcards and he realizes
pictures.
That it's his pictures.
His history.
Because you know yes. that has been something that has hit him yes. so hard mm-hmm. in every other relationship that he doesn't yeah. have the pictures that others have.
And what they represent.
Yeah.
Because it's not even just the pictures. If they got right. lost somehow, fine. He doesn't have any of those events.
People who
too.
Love him
exactly.
to hold on to them.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought it was really moving. It's Maya, right, who's researching about, you know, why Joaquin was never adopted. And she finds out that often biracial children are adopted less frequently than children who are white, and just that, yeah, just watching her, was it Maya or was it Grace?
I mean, it came up a few different times where, and I feel like Joaquin said that at some point,
yeah,
about like statistically
so.
Girls are more likely than
yeah.
boys.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I mean, of course, the statistics mm-hmm. are real, and
right.
like white children are more likely mm-hmm. than
and younger more
of
than
color.
Older.
Right.
And, yeah, and so I think, you know,
and
so
I
it comes
thought,
up a few different
yeah.
times.
So I just thought watching the three of them work through that and the impact that had on them
yeah.
and then on them as a trio.
Right. Because
of course
reconcile
how
that.
Horrible you would feel if you were adopted and your brother
yes.
was not adopted.
And then it could be for something like
right.
that, something that had to do with
yeah.
race. Like, then you have to deal with that
mm-hmm.
and that's really tough.
I thought that, what was the aunt's name? Was it Jessica?
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was a really good character for that short period of time. I mean, it was a little all rosy the way she
mm-hmm.
recognized that they were Melissa's kids, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm an aunt, and
yeah,
I, you know,
yeah,
like,
right.
I feel
it's
like
sweet.
It's so sweet. And
mm-hmm.
she was able to put the pieces together in a way nobody else could have
mm-hmm.
for those kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she, as a up close and personal witness, could say to Joaquin, "Your mom and dad were
mm-hmm.
so much in love.
Yeah.
Do you not know you're named after your dad?"
Mm-hmm.
Like, she could give him a gift that there was nobody else in the world
mm-hmm.
to give him.
Yeah.
And I love that.
And it was almost like it was flipped, because she was able to, Joaquin was able to get all this almost closure and
yes.
this loving, and then the girls kind of who've had all this stability and
mm-hmm.
loving families,
mm-hmm.
maybe the family, like there's
right.
there's dynamics within the family that aren't
mm-hmm.
optimal, but they have all the strong family, and then they find out that these were a series of things that happened after Melissa
yeah.
was kind of went down a dark road,
yeah.
right?
And
yeah.
so theirs is less of a happy ending,
right.
if
yeah.
you in terms of biology,
right?
So
Joaquin finally gets kind of a break. In
yeah,
a way.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to something you said, Ashley, because it's really minor in a way, but I thought it was a nice example. So Grace makes this new friend, Raffi, who works in the what's the place called the Whisk.
Whisk it up.
I love
something.
That.
Yeah, that's so cute.
Because Grace's mom is constantly making insomnia purchases that are just ridiculous.
I love that.
I
love
that.
That was
so funny.
And let's just say I used to occasionally have to take sleeping medication, and let me tell you, I have once or twice been on Ambien.
That's
been like,
yeah.
It is dangerous if
yeah.
you are online. No good's coming out.
Ashley's
that.
Suffering from that yeah. right now.
I don't do the online purchasing,
no.
but I have seen it firsthand.
So,
yes.
I mean, that's all right. That's a funny little nothing detail, but that makes something more real.
Yeah.
But then there's Raffi, who's the guy that works in the store, right? And then Grace and Raffi develop, it's very clearly just a friendship at first.
Right.
And it's kind of trepidation. But at one point, Grace asks Raffi something about, like, the way that somebody who's Hispanic would feel. And he kind of calls her on it, like, are you asking
yes.
me to speak for all of like, the Hispanic people?
Uh-huh.
You know, that's crazy and racist, right? And she's not trying to, because she says, I don't know how to ask these questions, because
right.
this has not been her reality. But she basically wants to know, at some point, could you maybe reach out to Joaquin? And I love that. I thought that was such a sweet little,
mm-hmm.
it did not feel forced to me. It felt like she's seeing these two different people in her life that both matter and that have this commonality that it just is.
Yeah.
Well,
you know?
I think Joaquin, part of what Benway was showing with Joaquin is the rootlessness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That, like, you know,
and that
Raffi
didn't have that. He did have the family.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, he, like exactly that quote with the not speaking Spanish. And,
yes.
like, the woman who wanted him to get the tamales from his family.
Yeah.
We don't need to get into it.
I know, but
anyway, I think those
yeah.
kinds of things that he
yeah.
experiences that are part of his reality, of these expectations that people have for him, and it's one more way that him not having a family has
mm-hmm.
made him so rootless,
yes.
With no history, no culture, and in his perception of
yeah.
how other people see him and like what they expect of him. And part of that whole, like, I don't want to disappoint people and I want to give them what they need,
right.
and how can I do that? And then
mm-hmm.
maybe it's to run away from them, like Birdie.
save them from
Mark
me.
And Linda yeah. to save them from the damage that I am, basically. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, that part I felt was really satisfying and believable that with enough support and love and compassion and people who cared about him, he really could find those loving relationships.
So that brings us to, I know it's tied up very neatly with a bow, but the ending of this book, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, can you guys just, this is so fabulous, right? Because we get our happy ending. I get my happy ending. Mm-hmm. I'm on board with that because the whole party at the end, the combination adoption.
Birdie.
I mean, right,
so
and Birdie's
Birdie.
There.
Yes.
I just feel like, do you guys feel like you had to suspend a lot of disbelief to get, oh, Sarah's
yes.
nodding very quietly.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, I was happy was because I love the characters, but I was like, huh. this is convenient. I mean, I thought it was a convenience, but I enjoyed it, and I was okay with it.
Yeah.
But I did
think
I did have to suspend some belief that
every single thing. Stuff.
Yeah, because it was so many things. If it would have been just... Yeah. Yeah, there were just several things.
Because, again, she had so many complex threads throughout to try to pull them all together in a way that... I mean, because with Mark and Linda in general, like, when they gave him the car and he was, like, so hateful back, it's
mm-hmm.
hard to believe
mm-hmm.
that people... I mean, they're much better than me, is all
mm-hmm.
I have to say. That, like... They never lost their cool. They never got so fed up. And I think I can empathize with someone, but it's not going to stop me from feeling some frustration and anger that I felt like they managed to
mm-hmm.
not feel.
And you can still not want to, like, send him away.
Of course.
But,
of course.
Just like your own kids, you know, you get aggravated sometimes. Or not you, but me. I mean, as people,
we get
aggravated with our children. But
that
doesn't mean we don't want them. It just means we're aggravated at that moment in time.
Yes.
And they were just, like, magical. Foster parents.
It really did.
Yeah,
they were totally magical.
Yeah.
And so same with the ending, that felt some of that. But I loved that it came back around to Grace.
Yes.
And going to see the baby.
And that was...
Because I think that did not wrap up in the sense that, like, she was facing a really hard situation, but, I mean, her heart was still broken, and it wasn't trying to reconcile... She didn't try to wipe that away. I didn't feel like she tried to wipe away the struggles that people had. And same with Maya and her family.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like, you know, I loved it when she talked with her mom. And
So
I felt like Benway didn't try, even though there was the whole party part that did feel a little bit present, wrapped up.
There still
were a lot of things that were, you know, felt real.
Yeah, I loved when Grace got to see Millie. It's just beautiful. So it says, Grace sees her hair first, dark brown curls gathered at the back of her neck, the sun shining through the trees and dancing across her shoulders. She's wearing a tiny blue check dress and tights, plus a small white sweater. From this angle, Grace can see Maya's eyes, Joaquin's nose and jaw, Melissa's hair. Grace gathers her courage, finds her voice. Millie, she says, Peach looks up. She sees Grace, and she smiles.
I know. That was so pretty.
Yeah,
so that
sweet.
Was great.
Yeah.
It's just lovely.
I did want to say, there was one thing that I loved that she included at the end that was so small, but it stuck out to me. It's when, you know, throughout the whole book, Grace is chewing on the straws, and both Joaquin and Maya comment on it.
So does
Raffi
at one point.
And
Raffi
does at one point. And then at the end, Grace notices her mom, her adoptive mom, but her mom, that she is chewing on the straw, which it shows that she is created this nervous habit from observing her mom that raised her.
Right.
And not, it wasn't a biological thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because she
could.
Yes.
Your family.
Yes. So I really like that she made that distinction as well. Going to move into our pairing portion of the episode. This is Sarah, and my pairing for this book is Impulse by Ellen Hopkins. Before I talk about the book, I just wanted to say that Ellen Hopkins, her writing is super gritty, and a lot of her books, this one included, have triggers and difficult material, so definitely be aware of that before you even think about reading. But Impulse is a book about three teenagers who are at this psychiatric hospital called Aspen Springs. They are in there for a variety of different reasons, but all of them have done something that has put them in there.
Mm-hmm.
They suffer from depression and just a variety of things. It's told in alternating perspectives. It's about, you know, issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's about them creating family and relationships there, but also having to navigate some really rocky waters. So it reminded me of Far From the Tree in the format and just some of the themes, but it's definitely way grittier, mm-hmm. way more difficult to read than Far From the Tree, and it definitely is not... none of her books are ones that have a neat ending. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just be aware of that going mm-hmm. in. I loved her. I love her writing. A lot of it's told in, all of it actually is told in verse mm-hmm. and lots of metaphors. I think it's really different, but it is very, very difficult to read. But it's good.
A lot of students love her and read every single one of her books. So, yes. You know, for the teachers out there, Ellen Hopkins is a great choice for readers who are looking for a grittier mm-hmm. read than things that are, you know.
And when I taught 8th, I had some of hers mm-hmm. on my shelf, not a lot, but I think for high school, but kids really want to read them.
Yeah.
They really do. And they tackle difficult topics.
Yeah.
But she does use a lot of metaphors, so sometimes it's even difficult to.
True.
Okay. So this is Jen. So before I talk about my book pairing, while we were having our discussion, I kept thinking about the TV show This Is Us.
Oh,
really? And I don't want to give away anything because there are some great twists and turns in those episodes. But yeah, if you like this book, that might be a good TV show to check out.
That's a great point.
But my book is Little and Lion by Brandy. I think it's Colbert, but it could be Colbert. And this is her second novel. Her first novel was Point. She is just a great author. Little and Lion is about two step-siblings, kind of. Their parents technically aren't married, but they call each other step-siblings. Suzette, whose nickname is Little, and her brother is Lionel. And it is similar in dealing with a lot of issues. So I don't think this is a spoiler. I'll try not to give too much away. So this will be a short description. Lionel has bipolar disorder. And Suzette has gone to boarding school in part because of his diagnosis. And so she is coming back to Los Angeles to be with her family for the summer. And she is dealing with a lot, including the fact that she has discovered that she is bisexual. And she's trying to work out how to tell her family. A lot of times she feels like Lionel gets more of the attention because of his issues, and so she feels unsupported. So it's dealing a lot with the complexity of family in general, but also her family in particular, which is kind of unusual. It was a fast read, but man, I feel like Colbert tackles a lot in the novel and is just great. Oh, and there's also a racial issue. So Suzette is black and her mother is black and Lionel and his father are white. So that's an added complication that they are dealing with throughout the book. So I would highly recommend it. I think it's all told from Suzette's perspective. But beyond that, I think that if you enjoyed Far From the Tree, Little and Lion would be a great choice.
This is Ashley, and I wanted to talk about I'll Give You the Sun by Jandy Nelson, and it is one of my most favorite young adult reads of, definitely of the recent years. I just love that book. But the reason I thought of it for this particular book is just that it's also a lot about family dynamics and the bonds between family and the strain that can happen with family and how... we love each other, but we hurt each other. And how do you decide what's best for yourself versus what's best for your family? And so some of the struggles that all of them were facing, you know, like Grace trying to decide what to do with the baby is similar to some of the struggles that these characters have. And also just the way that life shakes out differently than what you expect it to do. You think you have a handle on how things are and then things turn out differently. And just the ways that you're... life pathway can change. And so it's about two twins, Noah and Jude, and it's told from both characters' perspectives, but you hear it's from two different time periods. Mm-hmm. So you're piecing together what happened. You can tell that they were really close and now they're really far apart and their relationship's really broken. And so it's all this like working to figure out how the beginning and the end come, you know, how they got to where they are from where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And it is heart-wrenching but really beautiful. And I think it deals with some gritty things, but in a in a manageable way. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I loved about it is that all of the characters are flawed, and that you can see their flaws, but that they all are trying to do the right thing, mm-hmm. and trying to take care of each other. And it's this like constant attempt to figure out who you are and how to take care of the people you love. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a really beautiful
book. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. I've not read that one. So this is Jenny, and my pairing book for this is My Sister's Keeper by Jodi Picoult. And the complexity of sibling relationships, there's so many ties to this book. But I've got to say, before I say anything else, if you have only ever seen the movie and not read the book, forget everything you know about this, because that is a travesty of modern life.
I have not seen the movie. I loved
the
book.
Don't ever watch the movie. It's so terrible. I mean, but movies and books are different, and that's fine. Yeah. They decimated this book with this movie. It was so, they changed everything that matters. I'm so outraged at it.
I feel a short episode.
Yes, movies that have been ruining the book. Yes, exactly. I have opinions. So here's the thing. This book is amazing because, so there's a girl named Kate who has cancer, and it's told from alternate family perspectives, which is another thing. That's one of my very favorite literary techniques. Yes. Love that. And so Kate gets cancer, and her parents decide to conceive another baby to be a bone marrow match to save Kate's life. And you go through, for me, at least at the beginning, I kind of think, oh my gosh, what terrible people are they? Like, they just have a baby to save another baby. I mean, that's very simplified, but that kind of reaction. And then you get later in the book, and you see this mom who's kind of giving her 2-year-old when Kate was little this bath, and she sees all these bruises on her daughter, and cancer is just starting. And you think, do whatever you have to do to save your daughter, like save her. Like, I mean, it's very compelling because the people that seem like the bad guys are the good guys, and the good guys, I mean, then there aren't even good, bad. That's the thing. It's that complexity of family. It's the tie of sibling relationships. It's the unexpected. It's the messiness of life and how we are connected to each other, and how when you love someone, their mess is your mess, and you kind of want to save them from you, but you also want them to keep you up. It's a different book in a lot of ways because it's for grown-ups and it's, you know, about a whole family, but so many similarities. It's one of my favorite books, but don't watch the movie. So bad. So in terms of classroom connections, this is Jenny, and I'm sure everyone knows by now that I taught 6th grade, but I just feel the need to say it. In case you have any new listeners, welcome. I taught 6th grade for 21 years, and I would not put Far From the Tree on my shelf. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, if somebody gave me a copy, I guess maybe, but there's a little bit of language. It talks about teenage sex. It's not bad at all. It's just, I would not probably have it in my classroom. But there are a couple of really great books that I would have in my classroom. One is called One for the Murphys by Linda Hunt, and it is amazing. There's a girl who is a foster child, and as the book evolves, you learn why she's been taken away from her biological mom, and she's living with this family who's just this really nice, normal family, and how it kind of gets sabotaged, and she wants to be back with her mom, and all the different layers of that. And then I also taught The Pinballs by Betsy Byers, which is written back in the 70s, but because we used to have jokes about how old Miss Miller was when this book was written, kind of thing. And it's definitely a very simplified kind of book. It's a 70s, but it's very different. But it's three foster kids who end up in the same home. And it's really a very cleaned up kind of look. It's not gritty at all. But I was always amazed at the conversations we had, because often when I taught, I would have kids who had been in foster care, who had adoptive siblings, and they could relate to, I mean, this is how old this book is. Chrissy McNichol played one of the Pinballs, if that tells you anything, in the after school special movie that they made on ABC. But even though it's a very simplified, cleaned up look at the process, it's very sweet, very well done for what it is. And it often prompted great conversations. Mm-hmm. So, I did have 6th graders that I think could read and appreciate and love Far From the Tree. But I would definitely have One for the Murphys and The Pinballs on my shelf.
This is Sarah, other middle school representative. Since I had 8th graders, so I would have put Far From the Tree on my shelf for sure. Probably wouldn't have taught it. Probably just wouldn't have taught it for the same reasons Jenny said, but I definitely would have had it on my shelf for 8th graders to read. I did have another book that, it's also an older book. Well, it was 2002, not quite the 70s. But it's Pictures of Hollis Woods by Patricia Riley Giff. And she had a lot of good books a while back. Mm-hmm. Back in the day. So this book is about Hollis, who is a foster kid. She was abandoned by her mom as a baby in a park called Hollis Woods, and that's how she gets her name. Mm-hmm. And it's about her journey as a foster child. She's placed with a family, and something happens, and she feels like they won't ever love her again, so she asks to leave, and then she's placed with this elderly lady, mm-hmm. and it's just, it's about being a foster kid, mm-hmm. it's about having to deal with a caseworker, mm-hmm. and, things that you give up, and it's a really good book. I actually did teach this one year to my students. My students who struggled a little bit with reading, and they enjoyed it. It's mm-hmm. an easy read. Mm-hmm. It's short. So mm-hmm. I would have also had this on my shelf to go along with, but it has some of the same themes.
Mm-hmm. This is Jen. So Ashley and I both taught high school. I would definitely have this book on my shelf. I don't know if I would have taught it a whole class. I'm not sure it could sustain a long unit. Mm-hmm. I think if I gave it to kids who could read it fairly quickly, that I might have done that. I would more likely use it in lit circles.
This is Ashley, and I agree. I would definitely do it in lit circles, but I think it's not prohibitively long, but it's long enough to where a whole class would be difficult to, especially with not an advanced or AP mm-hmm. class. If you're doing the reading in class or a lot of it in class, it would be heavy for that just because it's long enough to where it'd be difficult to get through. And also that it does hit a wide range of issues, which I think is great, but it's not going to appeal to every reader.
Right.
And so, a lot of books don't, but I think that typically whole class, I would want something that moves a little, has a little bit, not that this was slow paced, but that just has a bit more of like the mm-hmm. suspense aspect.
Yeah, this is not drop that at all.
Right. So I feel like in lit circles would be great for the kids who want it and have that choice.
Yeah.
But I think whole class, it has some beautiful mm-hmm. Aspects, but I think I would feel like I was kind of dragging them through maybe mm-hmm. to get into those nice issues that are so good to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening to Unabridged. Do you have comments or opinions about what you heard today? We would love to hear them. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter @UnabridgedPod and on the web @unabridgedpod.com.